James Stewart, now retired general of the Air Force, came into the studio resplendent in his Air Force First Lieutenant's uniform. We were deep in the war, and Lieutenant Stewart had received special permission to do what you are about to hear, because there were still some of us who whispered that neither Auschwitz nor Pearl Harbor were any of our business.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Plays for Americans by Arch Obler. As a further contribution to the war effort, NBC brings you a special series of new plays dedicated to people of goodwill everywhere who believe in the inherent dignity of man, who fight together now for a better world for all. This is a war of men and ideas, and these are the plays of the men and ideas that make up our America and our world of today. As the seventh of this series, the National Broadcasting Company has the pleasure to present Lieutenant James Stewart in a new play, Letter at Midnight.
I'm going to read you a letter. It's from my son. And it reads, Dear Father, I started to date
this letter December 6th, and now I see it's half an hour after midnight. And I remember how meticulous you were about times and dates, so I changed the date line. Now it's a warm night. One of the many subtropical nights down here that have steamed away all memory of my good New England ancestry. Oh, now, please understand me. I'm not ashamed of the long generations of us who had to break ice from around the wells. But, oh, it's good to be warm and quite alive. And it's about being alive that I want to write to you, Father. In your last letter, you asked a question and made a wish for me. Do you recall? Well, let's talk about the question first. It's a very simple question, and one I know you've wanted to ask me for a long time. Son, why did you do it? It's funny, isn't it, Father? For 2 years, you must have wanted to ask that question, and so help me, for 2 years, I wanted to tell you, but somehow I haven't been able to until right now. So here goes. Why did I do it? Why did I suddenly, 2 years ago, do a backflip out of all the things I'd known in life? Well, let's start at what I was 2 years ago. No, I can hear you say you know. Oh, no, Father. Now, let me tell you. Tom Greer III, last year in college and the biggest mouth this side of Il Duce. What a mouth. Opinion, 2 cents a dozen and on credit. Subject, any subject.
I'm telling you, you're crazy.
Oh, you're no authority.
It's not theory, it's fact.
Who's your authority?
Oh, stop making so much noise.
I said it, you heard me.
Academically speaking, but be practical. All right, fellas. Now, listen to me. Now, human nature is human nature. Lord Brooks said it all. Oh, what a sad condition of humanity. I'll tell you, it's a condition based on the innate nature of man. The nature of his bones, his bloodstream, and his brain cell convolutions. The nature of all he's been as he climbed up out of the slime. Only evolution will change that, not preachment, nor law, nor moralizing.
Yeah, Father. Opinions of everything along the line. A year ago, I even knew all about women.
Well, now, I'll tell you, Charles, a friend, there's no such thing as an intelligent woman. Understand me, right? I'm speaking purely philosophical standpoint, of course. But it's been my experience that women can be divided into two classes. Speaking purely from a personal observation, of course, I should say that both classes are equally divided. I'll put it more simply. Now, what the average woman wants out of life can be stated in just a very few words.
But the subject I could talk longest and loudest on, Father, was, of course, the world situation. I saw the whole thing as clearly as if it were a 5-ton truck coming down an empty road. The war, well, that was just history repeating itself. The money bags were on the loose again. Imperialistic stuff. The have-nots trying to grab what they didn't have, and the haves trying to hold on to what they had. Well, they weren't going to rook any of us young fellas into their little game. No, sir. Not as long as I could be chairman of committees and subcommittees and resolution committees.
Well, fellow students, we had a hard time getting this assembly hall. You could think this was the Dark Ages instead of the year 1939. Certain of our university authorities tried to stop us. But anyway, here we are, and as our first speaker, let me introduce to you the chairman of the Peace Committee, Tom Greer.
This is indeed an historic occasion in the history of this university. I say historic because this resolution we are about to adopt will make history. We say, keep America out of war. Keep her out of war at any price. We deny that America will ever find reason to enter into this war. And we deny that America's enemies are awaiting without.
Oh, I tell you, Father, I knew all the answers. And the first of every month, waiting for me in the mailbox outside the fraternity house, was a nice check with your name on the bottom of it for $200. Yes, life was quite a thing for me 2 years ago. And then, all of a sudden, it wasn't. It wasn't because there was a girl. No, you don't know about her. Well, let me tell you.
What a day, huh, Tom?
Yeah.
Can't be sure it's quiet today.
Well, it's Saturday.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Tennis?
Look, wait, let's relax. Just relax.
Okay. Yeah, that's what grass is for. Cows and golf greens. And just sitting on. You know, Tom, I was thinking. Sunday, if it's a nice day, why don't we roust out a couple of females and go on a little picnic?
Wait a minute.
What?
Hey, who's she? That girl walking this way. Who is she? Who is she? It began very simply, Father. A girl walking across the campus past the place where Hal and I lay warming in the sun. I thought I knew all the girls, but not this one.
I don't know who it is. Honestly, I don't. Hey, wait a minute. That must be... Yeah, I know. Bill Royce was telling me. She's in his nutrition 103 class. Some kind of a refugee foreigner.
Yeah, she sure got something, eh?
I don't know why to this day, but I found myself going around the campus asking about her.
She's only been on the campus a couple of weeks.
Listen, Worf, I tell you, she just won't talk.
Yeah, I'm in one of her classes, but that's all, brother.
Sure, her name is Lisa Edling.
Lisa Edling.
I found out very little. Lisa Edling, her name, that was all. Oh, a refugee girl taking courses at school, so what? So what? So, inside of a week, I found myself signed up for Nutrition 103, and sitting in the class, not hearing a thing, just looking at her.
Research on the bee complex has been accelerated tremendously during the past few years. The success in isolating B1 will unquestionably be a great determining factor in the isolation of other filtrate factors. In the course of yesterday's lecture, I mentioned the name by which B1 is now commonly known. Mr. Greer, will you give us the name, please, and describe the substance? Mr. Greer?
Brown. Brown hair, blue eyes. Oh, gosh.
Well, Father, I think they call the process falling in love. That's a laugh, isn't it? Me down here and telling you how I fell in love. But it's all one piece with what I did, why I did it. Lisa Edling. In spite of the fact that I thought I knew all the answers, I didn't get a chance with the questions. She just wouldn't talk. I'd do an off-tackle play right after class and corner and try a few bright and scintillating remarks. And she'd smile and murmur something about being very busy and then do a quarterback sneak out of the door. Every day I had to go to that nutrition class and hear cute little whispers of vitamin B1 has brown hair and blue eyes. Father, the strain on my ego was something quite terrific. But Lisa Edling went her way. She wouldn't talk to me. I wanted to talk with her, but all she had to do was just look at me and say, well, no, I'm very busy, and my tongue would all tie up, and that was that until the next time. And so it went until the night we had our great peace rally. As usual, I was chairman.
And now, fellow students, it is my privilege to present to you another member of our student body who needs very little introduction, the leader of the Demosthenes Debating Society, Frank Culbert.
Fellow students, we've had just about enough words. Now the time has come to act. We, a handful of the far-seeing students, must put into dynamic action that which we believe. And we must tell it to America in unmistakable terms. The war that is going on in Europe is not our war. No part of it touches upon our lives. If we keep the American ideal shining brightly, no one will ever dare attack us. We, as the future leaders of America, demand that nothing be done to jeopardize our future.
You fool! You young fool!
Tom, call the meeting to order. Tom, what are you just sitting there for? Call the meeting to order. Bang the gavel. Call the meeting to order.
Well, I didn't call the meeting to order. All I knew that she had been there, and now she was going. And then somehow I was out of the place and running after her down the dark campus parkway.
Lisa. Oh, wait a minute, please.
What? Who?
Well, it's Tom. Tom Greer.
Oh.
Lisa, I mean, Miss Edling, I've got to talk to you.
Why?
Well, I just said it. I want to talk to you.
What are you doing here? You should be back with them.
Look, will you slow up? I'm here, not there. Now, so talk to me.
You are the chairman. You belong there.
I belong where I want to be.
Why did you follow me?
Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy. Maybe to ask you a question.
A question?
Well, yeah. Why did you jump up suddenly like that and call Frank Culbert a fool?
Because he is.
Well, Phi Beta Kappa, and you call him a fool?
I called him a young fool, and he is.
Well, all right. Why?
You don't really want to know.
Well, now, wait a minute. I do. Why else do you think I'm doing this marathon after you here?
You are interested in women, not the truth. Do not follow me. Please go away and do not follow me.
She was a smart girl, Father. Sure, it was part of my line. I didn't really care what she said. All I cared was that she just said it to me.
I think I am the fool, letting you talk me into coming to this place.
Oh, really? Haven't you ever been in this black hole before?
No.
Well, why, the beanpot's a campus institution. Hey, come on here, a little service here.
No, nothing for me.
But you said...
Mr. Greer, I came here only because you were most convincing that you really wanted me to tell you why I interrupted at the peace meeting.
Oh, all right. Well, do you mind if I catch myself a double Coke?
No, of course not.
Did you want something?
Yeah, Brian. Oh, hello, Judy.
How's your double pneumonia?
Huh?
What do you have?
Hey, I was really sick last night, Judy. You can give me a double Coke.
Huh? Yeah? Two?
No, just one.
Yeah, and a jigger of carbolic.
Jigger of carbolic, yeah. Oh, that's another campus institution.
I want to ask you a question.
What about her?
Oh, no. Tell me, please. Do you believe that nonsense the other boy was saying?
Nonsense?
Yes. He said that the war that is going on in Europe is not your war, that no part of it touches your life, but of course that is nonsense.
Well, now, wait a minute. I believe that. England and Germany are fighting one of their old imperialistic wars.
No, Mr. Greer.
No what?
This is not a continuation of an old power war. This is a fight for the survival of an ethical civilization. In plain words, a fight for the survival of the individual to live in a world of truth and honor and justice.
Here's your Coke.
Thanks.
You're welcome, Mr. Pneumonia.
Yeah.
Mr. Greer, do you think that your American freedom, your freedom could go on living in a world that belongs to Hitler? Do you think that in his world you could have this wonderful university where you could go to learn as you pleased and what you pleased? Or you could speak wisdom or nonsense, where the final decision as to your part in life was not a political bureau's orders, but your own to make. to work for, to fight for.
Oh, no, that's where I disagree. Oh, on that last point.
What?
Well, I don't think there will ever be any occasion for fighting if we keep clear of the fight.
Oh.
What, you shiver?
Yes.
Well, why?
I once heard my own brother say what you have just said. Please, I want to go now. I want to go now.
Well, Father, after I left her that night, I tried to figure out how I felt. I liked her, oh, yes, more than ever, but she puzzled me. She, certainly not like any girl I'd ever met before. She's pretty, young, and yet, how shall I say it? Not young. Yeah, that was it. Younger than I was, and yet, every look of her, every word she said, it was as if she was carrying the whole world right in the middle of her back. All those things she'd been talking about, sure, they were important, but they weren't that important. Yeah, I said to myself, I'll have to teach her to look at all the issues of the day in the proper perspective. Well, I was chairman of this group and sub-chairman of that group, and we talked peace and war and the part of youth and the major issues, but, oh, nuts, that was part of our college activities. Yeah. Well, I decided I'd have to teach Lisa Edling that all that was just part of our young lives and not all of it. We had a date the next Sunday.
The water is wonderful, no?
The water is wonderful, yes. Hey, you laugh. I'll take you speed boating every Sunday.
Oh, no.
Gosh, if anybody had told me a couple of days ago that today would find me in the middle of New York Harbor going 30 miles an hour with Lisa Edling, I'd have told him to go kiss a psychiatrist or something.
You want to go back?
Oh, no, of course not. We're going straight for that island you seem so determined on getting on. Hope the skipper knows where to find it. I certainly don't remember any such place. What'd you say the name was?
I think Bedloe's Island. Yes, that is the name of it. Bedloe's Island.
And so, Father, we went to this island, Bedloe's Island. Did you ever hear that? I hadn't. Well, it turned out to be the piece of ground that they put the Statue of Liberty on top of. Well, I thought to myself, that's typical immigrant stuff. And then, okay, Bedloe's Island, Central Park, Park Avenue West. Tommy Greer III is going to make full use of that Sunday afternoon, believe you me.
Oh, no. No, Mr. Bear.
No, Tom.
Tom, I could not go there. I would like to see the Statue of Liberty from the inside, yes, but you climb so high, oh, I would get so dizzy. Come, we'll just walk around her.
Okay, it's your day.
Oh, she is beautiful.
Who?
She.
Oh, yes. I bet she's got big feet.
No, please.
What's the matter?
Please do not make fun of such things.
What do you mean? Well, that's just the American way.
What?
Well, we make fun of our most sacred institutions. Why not? That's a grown-up way. To have the proper perspective on things. Yeah. To have fun in life.
Fun? Is there not a time for fun?
Well, yes, now.
Oh, no.
Well, why not?
Because there's great danger.
What, on Bedloe's Island? What are you talking about?
I was talking of America.
Oh, now, wait a minute. Now, we're not in any war yet.
Oh, yes, you are. There is a war going on for the spirit of America.
What?
Yes, I tell you, it is true. The Nazis and the friends of the Nazis are trying to change the spirit of America. They are trying to change it into something that is selfish, that thinks only of its own comforts, its own fun. They are trying to make young men like yourself believe that the struggle in the world is something far distant, something only to be talked about, the way you talk about history. But this is happening, Tom Greer, flesh and the screams of little children and the blood of men dying to hold back darkness. When the Nazis marched into the little town in Austria where I lived, they stood my father and my sister against a wall and shot them. Because my father was the head of a labor union and my sister had written a book about the rights of men. My brother had been as you are, Tom Greer. The things that were happening in the world had always been things to be talked about, but he had never done anything about it. When the Nazis came for my father and my sister, my brother tried to fight them with his bare hands. But then it was too late. Much, much too late.
Father, we stood there by the Statue of Liberty, and she talked to me. And suddenly, somehow, I was really listening to her.
I've not been fair to you. Spoiling your holiday, telling you these unpleasant things. But I had to say them to you. For you, not the old men, but you are the hope of a world of people who cannot die. Who must not die.
Oh. It's sundown. They're lowering the flag.
Oh. Oh, Tom. Tom, help them. Make sure your wonderful flag will always rise again in the morning. Help them.
Father, I've almost come to the end of your question. I took her home. I said, goodbye, I'll see you in the morning. But in the morning, when I was back at school...
Hey, Tom! Tom Greer! Have you heard? That girl you once asked me about, the foreign one, you know. Well, my sister's in the dean's office, and she just told me that this Lisa Edling, or whatever her name is, quit school and left town this morning to go join some kind of Free Austria movement. Going back to Europe. Some kind of a dangerous project or something. You were asking about her once, so I thought maybe you'd like to know.
She'd gone away, back there. I heard the words, Father, and I kept on walking. I tried to think of the way she had looked the last time I'd seen her, but I couldn't. I could only remember words, her words. And then one of the campus buildings, a crowd around it, the students carrying posters.
Hey, Tom. Tom, where have you been? We've been looking for you. Our committee, we've got to picket this place. Can you imagine the nerve of the dean letting those fellas in here? Yeah, an Army Aviation Examining Board setting up headquarters right on the campus to get students to volunteer to join the Air Corps. And guys are actually joining. You could think we were in a war or something. Hey, Tom, what are you going in there for? Tom, what are you going in there for?
That's all there is to it, Father. The answer to your question as to how it happened. I walked in to where they sat, a major and a captain, and I just told them I wanted to enlist. That's all there is, Father. And yet, not quite all, for there's the matter of the wish you made in your last letter to me. Do you recall that, too? You said that no matter what my reasons were for joining with the Air Corps, you wished that I could have in this, my 23rd year, the life you knew when you were 23. And then you filled 5 solid pages with memories of that year. The glorious turn of the century, you called it. America, after long years of struggling, was sitting down to enjoy her new richness of soil and forest and mines. The accumulation of all the hard work of all her little people. And men like you built their homes and raised their families and put their money in the banks. And life outside was bright and glistening. And men wrote about when knighthood was in flower and sang of Daisy Bells and read of David Harum. Applauded actors playing Beau Brummel and Monte Cristo and Ben Hur, the Floridora. The glorious 1900s. Yes, and America was rich and growing richer. And everything would always be that way. For we indeed were quite the wisest. And there was no world but our world. And there were 2 broad oceans all around us. And life was good and safe. Safe. Everlastingly safe. And that's why you wanted to give me your old world, Father. To give me safety. But now I tell you, I don't want it. For in that safety,
was a decay that grew and grew. A rottenness of men who thought security could be bought with strong beams in their houses and thick vaults in their banks, who talked of Christ and who applauded evil when it grew powerful, who thought that the world of their family was more important than the world of men. That safety, Father? Oh, no. Not at the price of a world where men grew fat and children hungry. Not a world where every 50 years they blast and bomb and burn your churches. Where power feeds itself on persecution. Where deviltry of self stands upon the throats of all the little people. I don't want that world, I tell you. This is my world. And this is my day. For now at last men fight. And know that they are fighting against the miseries you forgot in your world. Good and evil, clearer than ever before in the history of man, stand facing each other across the blood and the tears. This is my day, Father. Our day, our fight. I may die, but I'll be fighting for my world. And even dead, it'll be my world. A world of people living in the peace that will come, that must come. The peace of all the brotherhood of men together at last in common decency, in simple justice.
That is the end of the letter from my son, dated December 7th, Pearl Harbor.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have just heard Lieutenant Jimmy Stewart in Letter at Midnight, a new play by Arch Oboler. This was the seventh in a special series of plays for Americans brought to you by the National Broadcasting Company as a further contribution to the war effort. Included in the cast were Lieutenant Stewart, Mercedes McCambridge, Byron Kane, Gloria Blondell, Lou Merrill, and Byron Palmer. The special musical score was composed by Meredith Wilson. The orchestra was conducted by Charles Dance.